Now, they say in the little video, you know, everything is, you know, you can ask anything, well, almost anything in the video. So, of course, like, the first thing that comes to mind is the Doc disrespect ban, and that's going to be spam asked. Yeah, they're definitely not going to cover that. Welcome back, everyone, to the Gaming Careers Podcast. My name is Ben. I'm here with Pete, as always. We've got a lot of cool topics to talk about this week for you guys. We have, first of all, some cool events coming to the Twitch this week or that have happened in the past week. Some new updates to some page improvements on the Twitch side. We also have some questions from you guys in the podcast side, as well as on the Twitch subreddit, as always. And a new Gaming Careers video that came out this week. So lots to talk about. Pretty excited for it. But Pete, how's it going today, man? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, mate. It is finally the day where after this podcast I'm going to get my haircut, so I can stop wearing caps in every single podcast, every single video. I haven't actually seen any comments about it, but I'm sick of wearing them, so that's enough of a reason to celebrate, in my opinion. Unless something weird happens, I get there and they've lost my booking or something like that, I should have no more caps in my videos from now on. So very excited. How are you?
Good, man. How long has it been since you got a proper haircut?
I need to look this up, actually, because it was the same hairdresser that I went to. So I honestly think it's probably 6 months, maybe even longer.
That's crazy, because in the US...
it's horrendously long.
Yeah, in the US, we've had haircuts for a while. So it's weird to me that you guys are just getting over there in the UK. I did have my second COVID shot over the weekend, and that was a little brutal. But I'm vaccinated now, fully. I don't know if you guys are doing over there in the UK on that side, but... pretty excited for that.
I'm halfway through. I've had one of two.
Nice. Okay. The second is worse than the first, so brace yourself for that one. In any case, we've got a lot to talk about this week. I think the first thing that I just kind of saw going through, I didn't see anyone discussing this. So we talked in the past about how for Twitch embeds, they've been creating the purple screen of death and all sorts of issues for Twitch embeds on other sites, for guide sites and community sites and wherever else. So they actually made a slight update to the offline page where it'll actually show your schedule of your upcoming streams if you have that set now right in the embed player, which I think is pretty cool. I think this shows even just for offline pages in general on Twitch now too, if you have a schedule set, and it's built right into the widget. So you don't have to have like a separate schedule panel or something. It's just right there in the video, which I think is really nice if viewers come to the channel and it's offline, but they want to know when the next stream is going to be, or if this gets, you know, embedded in other community sites, then you can see the schedule right there. A small change, but I think it's actually pretty cool. You have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we've mentioned before in the podcast that the schedule is actually quite hard to find, especially if you're like new to Twitch and maybe you've followed a link from Twitter or Instagram and then you've missed the streamer. This is a super handy way to now see their upcoming stream. So not only the day and time that it's going to be, but what category or game they're going to be playing. So Apex Legends, Just Chatting, anything like that. So I think this is what they should be doing by default, actually. And then you can jump to the actual schedule if you want to see more details or more than just the next three streams. I think this will be really handy. So yeah, really cool. And like you said, I didn't see this mentioned anywhere. So props to you for capturing it in a screenshot. Let's see if it's just like slowly getting rolled out or if it's going to become, you know, talked about by Twitch in an official announcement or not.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is make sure you guys have your schedule set if you can on your channel, because it won't show up otherwise. And it is a pretty, you know, pretty nice looking display for this, so I think it's worth doing. And of course, if you're hosting a channel, it's not going to show there if they come to your page. But if you aren't hosting someone, then it's really good for viewers who come by when you're offline to know when you'll be on next. So pretty cool improvement. There was also, this was maybe one of the bigger things this week, Twitch purged a ton of bot accounts on the platform. I think millions of bots accounts this week. So there were, because of that, a lot of streamers lost a ton of followers from bot accounts, essentially, especially the biggest streamers, right? Because they have the most bot followers. So altogether, though, I think this was pretty well received, because you might have, if you've been streaming on Twitch, there have been a lot of bots going around the platform recently. So I think it's nice to see they're getting off, even if you might have a follower hit to you. I think it's worth it in the long run personally. But did you have a chance to see this, Pete?
Yeah, so I shared this as well through Twitter, and I had a quick look at like the big streamers. I went through Social Blade and like typed in each of their names, like thinking like I've got to find the best screenshot that I can find. So I tweeted out about XQC losing 2 million followers over the course of 4 days, I think it was, which is crazy. And I know XQC has before mentioned that he has a lot of like follow botted. He knows like certain days when he hit, you know, an extra 500,000 followers, which just doesn't happen. So it must be bots. But I think I missed the biggest one, actually. I think Soda Poppin was the biggest with like 3 million I ended up seeing. So yeah, some of these big streamers have lost millions of followers overnight. But I think all of them, you know, I'm not in any way saying that any of these have used bots to get followers on their accounts. This is 100% like the follow bot networks trying to make their accounts look legit by following a few big streamers. So I think pretty much everybody, like no matter how big you were, probably saw some dip in followers. Maybe really small streamers didn't see any at all. I looked at mine and I think I lost a couple of hundred, even though I haven't been streaming on Twitch particularly recently. So yeah, this seemed to affect people site-wide, really.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because I know a lot of people who've gotten certain milestones on their follower account because of bots. So now they have a chance to kind of redo that one properly without being bot flooded. And you know, I think bots are always going to be some sort of issue, but as long as Twitch can keep combating them like this, then I think it's going to be good for everybody. Because also, like, from a brand perspective too, if you're trying to say that, like, I have this many followers or this many viewers, and the reason why Twitch combats it too is because it's not really being honest if you're trying to sell yourself for people. If, you know, half of your followers or, you know, a percentage of your viewers are just bot accounts that aren't doing anything to engage with your channel, then this will help kind of weed those out and give a real, more realistic view of how much engagement you're getting. So I think it's good, and hopefully we'll see more of these in the future, because I'm sure the bots are not going to be stopping anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think they're just probably going to get smarter, aren't they? That's usually how these things happen. So whether it would be harder for Twitch to determine a bot account from a real account, but yeah, it's a good thing. Even though it makes your numbers lower, it's a good thing that, you know, it's a more realistic number of actual humans that are following your stream. Lots of Twitch news this week. I think maybe next we'll talk about last night's Twitch Rivals, but not just an ordinary Twitch Rivals. It was partnered with Tyler One and I think a few other streamers, but it was hosted on Tyler One's stream, wasn't it? A Twitch Rivals for powerlifting, so actual weightlifting. Did you catch any of this? I know that you're into your gym workouts, so is this something that cropped up?
Yeah, so this is really cool. I think Tyler One did host it. The first powerlifting competition that I've seen, and the first one that Tyler One has actually been part of, but it was basically a bunch of weightlifter streamers who all kind of took turns trying to get their personal bests in deadlifting, squatting, and benching. I think it was those three. I didn't see the actual event live, but I saw they put out like a little post-event reel on social media, and it looked really cool. I mean, obviously Tyler One was very loud and excited and over the top during his PBs, and I think he did personal best on the deadlift and kind of dropped the squat, which looked a little rough on the clip, but overall, it was really cool to see like all different types of streamers jump in on this. I think even like Wardell from TSM jumped in on it, and a couple other people who are in the esports scene. So a good mix of people. And the first, again, we talked about kind of the break away from gaming a little bit. First time I've seen like a fitness competition on Twitch, and this one seemed pretty successful and well received from the community. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of them in the future, maybe with Tyler One as well. I think he's like the perfect host to do something like that because of his size, audience, and just people wanting to see that stuff for a while. So I thought it was really cool. Did you have a chance to see it?
Yeah, I think it was really refreshing for a couple of reasons. Firstly, to see like Tyler One being so positive, because he's usually like a bit of a negative League of Legends streamer, isn't he? Also, can we just talk for a second about how strong he is? Like I knew he was jacked, but like, in kilogram weight, which I know you guys don't use, but you can probably convert it, he was doing deadlifting 250 kilograms, which apparently is 550 pounds, which is insane, and benching 190 kilograms, which is 415 pounds. Like, that's just actually absurd. Anyone that's ever been to the gym at any point in their life will probably know how ridiculous those numbers are. So it was a really cool stream, and like you said, loads of smaller fitness streamers also being hosted and probably blowing up a little bit from this event, and hitting PBs and things like that. I saw my mate Tomination Time, who I met at TwitchCon like 3 years ago, I think, at a Logitech event. And so it was cool to see him hosted because he's been doing weightlifting streams for forever now. So yeah, it was cool to see the interaction between them. And like you said, the Twitch Rivals sort of branching out into a new niche, which isn't gaming, and it still be successful. I think that was like the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see more people do, or more events like that with Twitch Rivals, whether it's powerlifting or other sports. I mean, like the rise of chess, even the last past year, I think we'll see other of these categories where you have even like game streamers do something different than they've been doing that they do on the side, maybe like music Twitch Rivals or something. I don't know. There's a lot of ideas out there for ways that they can mix it up. And it's just, those are really accessible for new viewers of Twitch and also just people outside of gaming in general. So it makes a lot of sense. I thought it was super cool though, and I would love to watch more of that in the future if Taiwan wants to do some more of those events or Twitch in general. We talked a little bit last week, of course, about Ludwig's stream coming to an end. We didn't confirm though, so he actually did achieve the new sub record on Twitch. He beat Ninja by, I don't know the exact number, but a good amount. And he did end the stream last Tuesday, I think it was, which was the 30-day record, and you know, just smashing every record on Twitch essentially with this stream, which is just crazy. I know we've talked about him at length on this podcast, but I think we have to cover the fact that the record did get broken, and I don't think he streamed since that day for good reason, but just kind of crazy to see him actually hit that milestone.
Yeah, I've got the numbers here. So he's reset the new all-time peak active subscriptions on Twitch at 283,066. So about 13,000 more than Ninja's previous record, which obviously stood for nearly 3 years. In fact, probably exactly 3 years now. So yeah, incredible. There's no point us talking about Ludwig in the past 4 weeks if we're not going to cover like the final bit to tie it all off. So yeah, he set the new record. He finished his 31-day stream. Very successful. Had loads of like major news coverage. I saw it on all like the major news websites over here in the UK. So not who don't usually report on anything to do with Twitch, we're still reporting about on it. So he's probably gained a ton of publicity. And I think like we said last week, it's just a well executed plan for a live stream that obviously kept going on. He probably had it in the back of his head that it could go on for a few days, maybe a week. He probably never envisioned it to be as successful as it was, but he clearly put the time and effort into it. So yeah, hats off to him. When will that get broken, Ben? Who's going to be the next streamer to break 283,000 subscribers at the same time?
It's crazy, and especially because like Ninja hit that original record with, think about what he did originally to hit that, in terms of like Twitch Prime was really kind of in its heyday essentially, and that was just becoming a thing and everyone was taking advantage of that. Fortnite was at its all-time peak. And of course, like the Drake stream and the Ninja events and all these other huge events that he had that were kind of set the new meta on Twitch. It's crazy that now we've broken that with Ludwig just streaming for so long, essentially, that he just built up this organic hype himself, and at some point was just bound to break it. So I don't see it ever being broken for a while. I don't really see people doing another 30-day continuous stream the way he did. I don't know, maybe someone will try it, but I don't think it would succeed the same way either, because it's already been done before, right? So it's got to be some brand new idea that's crazier, or maybe we hit some new big market on Twitch in the future, which is possible with like powerlifting and other types of stuff coming in. But I think it'll be a while, because it was what, 3 years or so since the Ninja record, I think.
Yeah, exactly. This actually probably segues quite nicely into looking at the latest update to Twitch Atlas, which we talked about maybe a month ago. I don't know how often he's doing them, maybe every month. Essentially, if you did miss that episode, it's somebody that gathers data for the top 20,000, I think 20,000, maybe it's 2,000, probably 2,000, top 2,000 streamers on Twitch, and looks at the audiences that are similar. So if you watch one stream, what's the likelihood that you also watch a different stream? And he sort of groups streamers together based on common audience, and then it builds it into like a solar system. So it's very visual, very hard to get across on a podcast. When we start live streaming this podcast, we're going to be able to have, you know, screen share up on one side so we can look into this a bit more. But he's released a new one right after Ludwig's subathon. So not surprisingly, Ludwig is the biggest planet in this solar system. XQC is still up there. But yeah, it's interesting to see all these different communities. And I think this one really highlights the languages much better than previously. You know, you got Russian, you got Korean streamers, you got French streamers, you got Spanish speaking streamers, all in their own little like solar systems in this big economy. And then I think it's most interesting looking at ones of similar color, but are a little bit further away from the rest of their streamers. Like Ludwig is a good example. He's red, which I think is with a lot of like the chess streamers he's with, or more like the variety type streamers. But then he's like really close to XQC and these more FPS gamer streamers as well. So yeah, it's really interesting to look at. What did you pull out from this? Anything interesting?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing obviously is Ludwig is this giant circle now that he has become the king of this new chart. But XQC is right behind him, kind of like the two, you know, kingpins of Twitch as of the past month. After that, you've got like, I think Shroud, Nick Merckx, and ESL CSGO being the top three, I'd say, after that. But yeah, you can definitely see the different communities that are broken out a little bit more in this chart in terms of the Spanish streamers being their whole new nebula kind of coming out now. You have all the Fortnite streamers still, I think, and the kind of the COD stuff blended together over here with Nip Mercs and Tim and everybody else. But I mean, it's crazy to see how just it shifted from the last month, even with Ludwig obviously growing so big and people kind of growing around him in that new viewer area. It looks like he might have actually kind of created a new area of viewers compared to, like, what's interesting is that Ludwig and XQC are different viewer types, if that makes sense, in this chart. So you have like not quite the same people watching XQC that are watching Ludwig, but they're both still massive. So it's kind of interesting to see the different breakouts of viewer archetypes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I always like finding odd streamers that are just in their own little zone. Like if you look at Ninja, anyone that still does follow Ninja knows that he's been streaming a lot of League of Legends over the past couple of weeks. And traditionally he's been an FPS streamer, so Valorant and obviously Fortnite before that. So he still shares a lot of audience with FPS gamers, Shiv FPS, who I know streams Apex Legends and people like that. But his color is the same as all the League of Legends streamers. So even though he's colored as a League of Legends category, he still shares most of his audience with the FPS gamers. So I don't know. I just like finding little tidbits like that. We've also got like the hot tub streaming meta, like right in the middle, like a few choice streamers that are maybe rightfully or wrongfully abusing the terms of service. But yeah, it's always interesting, I think, like diving around this and finding some streamers and where they sit in the Twitch world.
Right. Yeah. And we'll have to keep following this because I'm sure it'll update every once in a while, but it's cool to see how it follows the trends of each new month on Twitch. And so we'll see what kind of changes in the next month. I'm sure Ludwig won't be quite as big next month because he probably won't be streaming quite as much. Beyond that, I think we have, so was it just yesterday or today? They announced on Twitch, they're doing a Let's Chat where apparently everything is up for discussion. This was, I think, hosted by DJ Wheat and tweeted by him. So we'll see what this is. I don't actually know the date of when this is. Did you see that, Pete?
Yeah, I think Wednesday, April 28th. So the same day this podcast will go out, actually, at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So yeah, Twitch announcing that they're having a stream where there is no question that can't be answered. But I don't quite know how they're going to moderate that because they can't answer every question from chat. They say that they've got some planned topics. So I hope that they do still deal with some of the more difficult questions that are getting asked. DJ Wheat has always been pretty open and honest, I think, about things that Twitch is doing well and badly, even though he's an employee. So hopefully it's a really open event and they answer some of the questions, because I know a lot of people have their gripes about Twitch at the moment. But yeah, I thought this was interesting. This was kind of what they sold the town hall to be to me, though, like where they were going to answer loads of questions, and they didn't really do a great job at that. So I hope it's better.
That's, yeah, I'm unfortunately kind of skeptical because we've been burned in the past with these kinds of things. So I hope it's different. Now, they say in the little video, you know, everything is, you know, you can ask anything, well, almost anything in the video. So, of course, like the first thing that comes to mind is the Doc disrespect ban, and that's going to be spam asked. Yeah, they're definitely not going to cover that, unfortunately. But we'll see what happens. It'd be cool if they actually do take a lot of questions, are transparent, but we'll have to see, because when I've seen these things in the past, they've been pretty scripted, it seems like. So hopefully it's more of like an authentic live interaction type thing. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those. We'll have to wait and see. And that's what's going to be nice about when we start live streaming this podcast, is we won't be talking about things that are happening on the day that this gets released. Like, we'll be able to cover it exactly live. It'll be like its own time capsule and always up to date. We wanted to cover a little bit about the new Gaming Careers video. So if people haven't seen that yet, I did a video towards the end of last week looking at Rode, who are a popular microphone manufacturer. They make hundreds of microphones, honestly, and they've recently got into the streaming space, but they have released a free update to their NT USB mini microphone, which is a budget streaming condenser microphone. Well, not just for streaming, for podcasting too, but it's $99, I think. So fits into that under $100 price tag that a lot of people are looking at. And the free update basically was a software application called Rode Connect, which is very similar to Elgato Wavelink, which if you watched any coverage on that, was basically the biggest selling point of Elgato Wave microphones. So it allows you to basically and mix all of your audio sources in one place and then just send one final mix to your stream. So you can separate out your game sound from your Discord voice chat from your own microphone and have faders to control each of these volumes or mute them if you want to. So it allows you to have much greater control over your stream audio effectively. I'm hoping you checked that out, Ben. You've got to be in the notification squad. If you're on the podcast, you've got to be watching my content.
Yeah, you know, I always click that bell, so I had to check it out. Good. I did have a chance to watch through it. I think it's pretty cool to see the updates they're making to the mic and the software. And just interesting to see how software is really changing the game over the past year or two on the microphone side. I had a couple of questions for you. First of all, they kind of, this is a smaller one, but they kind of market this service as you can connect 4 microphones to 1 laptop mm-hmm. and do like a podcast at a round table with people. How, this is again, a small question, but how realistic do you think that is in terms of, wouldn't there be like echo problems and things like that too? Because it looks really cool, but I have my doubts.
Yeah, I think around a small table with condenser microphones, that's probably pretty difficult to do. But you'd hope that the person editing your podcast will be muting all the mics of the people not speaking. So hopefully, you know, you could edit it to be a way where it would actually sound decent rather than having all mics open at all times. Mm-hmm. Then you would probably get like, I don't know, it would sound weird because multiple microphones would be picking up each person. Rode did reach out to me after making the video saying, to be honest, we were really focusing on the podcasting features, but it's amazing to see how much value you see in the streaming side of things, and we've got plenty more to come. So a lot of my feedback in the video was, I'd love to see more channels, because Elgato Wavelink, I think, allows up to 9 separate channels. So you can really separate out like music, alerts, Discord chat, Chrome web browser, your microphone, and like have loads of control. Whereas Rode Connect right now is just 3 channels. So your microphone, your team chat, and your system, which is, you know, game sounds and music and everything included on that. I think it'll be super easy for them to make more channels. I don't see any restriction. That's just them making a new device driver. So hopefully they add more channels and then it becomes even more useful for streamers. But I guess the good thing is it's a cheaper price point than Elgato Wave. Even the Elgato Wave 1, I think, is maybe $110, $120, somewhere around there. Whereas this is obviously under $100 now and, you know, could well go on deal through the year because it's a microphone that's been out for, I think, a year, 18 months now. So there's probably opportunity for it to be reduced as well. So I think it's the great thing about this is for streamers, there's more options. It's not just Elgato thinking about what makes it a microphone more useful for streamers. Some could argue that Rode have kind of copied it, but I think, you know, it wasn't exactly, you know, you could already do this kind of thing with voice meter and stuff before. Elgato were just the first people to package it in a really like nice and easy to use format. So I'm really excited. I think the more competition in this space is always greater for the end consumer and for the streamers in this space. So fingers crossed, Rode are going to be working on lots of the things I suggested in my video. But yeah, did you have any other questions?
Yeah. So I, first of all, I agree with a lot of that stuff. And actually it kind of takes to my second point, which is the software was really impressive, and especially not even just like the audio controls, but the kind of modifiers they had to the mic. I think it was like the exciter and hi Siri, the exciter and the big bottom, I think, were the two options you had there.
Yeah,
and it really made a huge difference on the mic in terms of, even compared to the SM7B when you were talking into that, I think it was kind of hard to tell the difference between this mic and the Rode once you add those options. So like, do you feel like software is kind of leveling the playing field of XLR mics at this point? Like, is it catching up?
Yeah. So to clarify, I wasn't using the SM7B in that video because I didn't want to swap between like a dynamic microphone and a condenser because I thought it'd be too jarring. So I was still using my like shotgun microphone that I use, you know, normally when I'm filming in this direction, which is another microphone from Rode. And I sort of had it mounted above my monitor just off of camera. So I was super surprised at how clean it sounded, but I feel like condenser microphones in a acoustically treated environment always do sound quite good. That, you know, they capture a lot of the detail and top end of a microphone that dynamic microphones, at least typically, have a harder time picking up because obviously they're not powered. So I do think that software is going to be the big feature, and I think maybe Shure took the head start with their MV7, like their version of this, which is also has the option to be run through USB, because then you do get the software side of things. And if you can get people into your software using your software and really great features through that, then that's obviously better for you as a company than somebody using an XLR setup where they're going to use plenty of different brands. You can probably keep them in your ecosystem, so to speak. So yeah, I was super impressed. I did have some gripes in the video about the compressor and noise gate. It's just a tick box. I'd love to have way more control over where the gate kicks in and, you know, how much compression, what the ratio is, all those kind of things. But for version one of the software, I was really impressed, and it sounds like they're taking a lot of my feedback on board. So fingers crossed, it just continues to improve, and Elgato Wavelink, get the name right, also continues to improve, because one of the biggest differences in the advantage of Rode Link is that you can use more than one microphone, whereas in Elgato Wavelink, sorry, did I say Rode Link? I meant Rode Connect. Is you can use more than one microphone. Elgato Wavelink, you can only use one microphone at the moment, which, I mean, for streamers, most people are only going to have one microphone, but I think some people do like to have the option to bring on a guest, or, you know, do a couple stream or host a podcast through a live stream, all those kind of things. So hopefully both software continues to improve now that we have two competing with each other, you know, throw in the Go XLR and other hardware solutions. Like, we're getting lots of choices now as streamers, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and it's cool because software can always be easily upgraded, right? Like, it's really easy to get a software update for whatever's driving your mic than to get a whole new mic in the case of an XLR. So we might actually reach the point, because I've traditionally liked XLR mics more, of course, but if we hit the point where USB mics are just getting so many upgrades and have all these new features coming out, then it might be worth just getting one of those that's actually going to be more flexible for you in the long term. So just pretty cool to see, and I think we'll see more microphone brands branch out this way, since, you know, Rode and Elgato and Shure have started to do this. So I won't be surprised if, like, Blue starts up with their own stuff and other types of microphones doing this thing too. So
I think my question is, are we going to see a really good open, not even open source, but a solution that works with different manufacturers of microphones? Because, like, that's the common question on the Elgato Wave video. Does this work with other microphones? No. On the Rode video, does this work with other microphones? No. And you're not going to see that. I don't think you're going to see Rode open up their software to work with different brands of USB microphones. But there's nothing really, I don't think, stopping a software developer from, or a team, from building something similar that maybe does support different USB microphones, and is a little bit more easy to use or UI friendly than something like VoiceMeeter, which is typically been, like, really confusing for a lot of streamers to set up. So will we see that kind of solution? Because I think that's maybe a solution that a lot of people would pay for, because they want to keep using their current USB microphone, you know, HyperX microphone or a Blue Yeti or something like that, but still want the controls of being able to have all your different audio sources separately and then just sending one mix through. So that's something to think about as well.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal if there could be a universal solution, but like you said, it's just Banana VoiceMeeter is such a hard to understand program, and I've had so many horror stories of people who just completely jack up their audio and can't fix it with that. So need a really good user-friendly solution, but I would love it if that could happen in the future. So if you guys are a software developer out there and have that idea, then we highly encourage you to start doing that for streamers as a whole. We also had, so, viewer question this week. I know we didn't have a chance to get to it last week, so I'll make sure we hit it this week. I think this is from Laguna. Hopefully I said that correctly. Laguna said, I'm looking to upgrade from a C920 webcam. What should I get next? And so the options are Epic Cam, more expensive.
These weren't in the question. These were things I was sort of thinking about as results. So yeah, I think this is pretty common, right? The C920 is the Blue Yeti of streaming. It's the webcam that you can buy at your local Walmart or Amazon, Best Buy. Like, it's sold everywhere. It's good for the money. It's certainly not going to blow other cameras out the water, but it's good enough, especially if you're just using a small, you know, webcam. So Laguna's asking, yeah, once the upgrade, what should they get next? And I've sort of tried to think about a few different angles you could go here. So Epoch Cam, still don't know how you say that. Elgato, please change the name or make it easy to understand. Is Elgato software, which I think is about $10 or something, allows you to use your phone. I think it's iOS only, maybe it's Android as well now, as a camera in places like OBS Studio. So you can obviously, phone cameras have evolved much quicker than webcam cameras have. So that's a great solution, where you don't have to spend much money and you get a much better quality webcam. But you have to probably mount your existing phone every single time you want to live stream, which is annoying. You know, there's no doubt that that's an annoying thing to do. But there are plenty of other ways you can go down. I actually have started scripting up a video basically looking at these more expensive webcams. I don't know what to call them, but this group of webcams that's like around $200. Logitech StreamCam. Yeah, premium webcams maybe. So you've got Logitech StreamCam, Razer's new Kayo Pro, I think it's called, and then AVMedia's camera, which was the PW513. I think it's now called the Livestreamer Cam 513. So all three of those are, I think, around that $200 price point, which is expensive, especially when you're talking about comparing it to a C920. I remember, like, for Black Friday, C920 sometimes went on deal for like $25. I don't think you can get that now during a pandemic, but it's a serious step up. And do you see that gain in quality? I mean, what are your thoughts? If we just start with those two categories of Epoch Cam and then the premium webcam, so to speak.
Yeah, so Epoch Cam, again, I don't know how to say that right. I think that's probably really easy to try for people because it's just so cheap and almost everybody has a phone at this point. In fact, I have, like, I think over here I have an old phone. It's not on Android yet, by the way, which is the biggest downside for me, because I have an old Android phone that I'm waiting for Epoch Cam because I'm going to use like a you know, a desktop view or something. But it's so easy that I may as well try it and see how it looks. And then if that works for you, that's a really simple upgrade. And if that doesn't work for every reason, then you could look at some of these webcams. It's really tough to go for a more expensive webcam when you could just put that money towards like a proper camera too. Although those upgrade so often, so I see the concern there too. I have heard really good things about the AVMedia camera. The Logitech Brio is okay. I think it's a little overpriced maybe compared to some of the competition. But yeah, I think it's tough to go from that C920 to like the next step because there's not like a really great middle step between a full camera and the C920, right?
Yeah, I guess your real decision here is, if you don't want to go down the Epoch Cam route, is do you buy a premium webcam or do you save up for, you know, the entry-level mirrorless DSLR, which has commonly been like the Sony A5100. That's like the cheapest interchangeable lens camera that ticks all the boxes for live streaming, you know, like no overlay, and you can bring it on continuous power, and it doesn't overheat when you're using it for streaming. It does when you're using it for recording video. But or you can go down like the GoPro route. I know that like Harris is a big advocate for the secondhand GoPro. Like, you can buy like 3 or 4 generations old for pretty cheap, but then you still need to get a capture card with all of these like mirrorless DSLR or GoPro solutions. So that you're right, there isn't really anything at like $125 or something like that that is a big enough upgrade over the C920. But, you know, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
For me personally, I think I would make the webcam one of the last things you upgrade if you can, because you can find like a nice middle ground for microphones and lighting's easy to upgrade, and you can make the C920 look really good. Actually, I used that for quite a long time for my streams. And then, because for me, I'd rather save for the final thing, like the mirrorless, and just get that instead of, like, what you don't want to do is go get a Brio or an AVMedia right now, and then a year from now, want to upgrade again, and then you just use that $200 that you have to replace, and you could have put that towards a mirrorless and been, you know, saving some more money there. So that's what I would do personally, but I guess it's up to kind of your own budget and what you feel like your stream needs at the end of the day.
I'll do the content creator thing here and plug. I'm going to do a video on like these more expensive webcams, and I'm certainly going to be including footage from C920 and from like a mirrorless DSLR A5100 with stock lens. So hopefully that's going to help you decide, you know, what quality matches what budget. But also I'll give a shout out to a video that I did like a year ago, I think, which has been incredibly popular. Like, I didn't expect it to blow up at all, which was improving the look of your webcam. It's like improving the quality of your webcam or something is the title. I'll link it in the show notes for sure, which sort of looks at 6 or 7 common issues with webcams like the C920. So colors or frame rate or exposure or not saving settings or like all these kind of things. And I go around how to fix them. And I also talk about like the look pack that I have for free that anyone could download to apply some like color correction filters to your webcam. So yeah, plugging my own stuff, but I think there's a lot of value in that video and the video that I will hopefully be making quite soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's so much you can get out of the C920, so I would like stretch that to its absolute limit until you need to upgrade beyond that point, because it can do a lot. But good question, Laguna. Thank you for that. I think that was from Twitter or YouTube, you know, Pete?
I can't remember where I brought that from, but yeah, so thanks for the question. That's a great example of a good question that we can speak in detail about, like as soon as we start speaking about something like that, so many opinions come up. So thank you very much for the question. And as always, like anybody that wants to submit their own question, YouTube comments, me or Ben on Twitter, me or Ben on Instagram, even Discord, just make sure you get it to us and then we can talk about it next week. Do you want to just finish off with the Twitch topic that we saw on subreddit?
Yeah, so this actually just came up this past week as one of the most discussed topics on the Twitch subreddit. Basically, the question is, how do you deal with chat when, if you're someone who likes to respond to every message, which is something we encourage or try to be highly interactive when you're starting on Twitch, at some point you reach the point where you can't do that anymore, right? Because you have 20 people talking and you can't keep up with the chat. Like, how do you deal with that and transition with that as a streamer? Pete, have you ever had this experience streaming?
Yeah, I have. And I don't do as much live streaming as I should. Like one of my goals this year is definitely to bring back some kind of regular live stream. But certainly in the past, I've had the experience of not being able to keep up with chat. And it looks super easy, doesn't it? Like the big streamers that have literal thousands of messages a minute scrolling past make it look very easy. And you probably think, oh, that's so much easier than what I'm having to do right now with 4 viewers where I'm, you know, looking over a chat and no one's asked anything new and I have to make up something to talk about. But there's definitely difficulties for both, because you hopefully will get to the point where you can't keep up with the chat. And I'm not talking about thousands of messages a minute, but maybe just enough new messages coming through on your chat that you can't answer to everyone. And some of these people will be people from your community who have supported you from very early days and are used to you answering their question every time. And they might complain like, oh, you're not like you used to be. You're too big now. You don't answer my questions. Like, these are real problems that streamers deal with when they hopefully grow to the point where they can't keep up with chat. So it is tricky, and I can understand this perspective of feeling bad that you can't respond to every message when that's what you've been doing to grow your stream to that point, you know?
Yeah, it's tough, because I think even if you are a smaller streamer, you might have had a couple times where like a raid comes through, or for some reason you just have a really good night and chat is moving fast and you feel a difference from what you're used to. Or if you've kind of hit that point now where you have just been growing and it's become a constant thing, it's tough to get used to, because especially when you're starting, you want to respond to almost everyone that you can and make everyone feel included. But at some point, you can't see every message. And so I feel like this kind of thing is hard to explain. It's something that just kind of comes with experience as you do more streaming, because you just learn that you can't respond to everybody. So you have to kind of find your own path of, you know, responding to the ones that are most recent, or kind of continuing certain threads that you see throughout the chat, if that helps. I kind of view it as like there are different tides sort of as you're streaming. Like, sometimes chat's moving really quickly, and so you have to adapt and try to just pick out a couple different chat messages and try to have really quick responses. Or if things slow down, then you can have more thoughtful responses for people and just adapt how the stream goes. But again, it really just comes with experience and learning kind of your best way to react to that. I think once you hit the top end, right, like you can't really respond to almost any chat messages if you're in that like tens of thousands of viewers ratio. So it just kind of changes as you grow your channel. And it's something that it's just part of live streaming, because you're never going to respond to thousands of messages in, you know, a minute or so.
Yeah. And it's another skill, isn't it? It's a skill that you'll develop as it happens more often. You'll start to be able to sort of speed read and get an idea as to what chat in general are talking about, or their opinion on something. And you maybe don't have to pick out specific messages from people, but you can more respond to like chat as a collective. I think the most entertaining streams are always the one where it feels like there's a topic that's being discussed, and it's not like a streamer answering a question from chat and then going back to playing their game and then answering a question from chat, but there's like, it feels like a conversation that you're a part of. So yeah, you obviously want to be picking out the questions or the replies or the responses or the opinions that are about that topic that you're already talking about, and don't get sidetracked by people asking, you know, what mouse do you use or something like that. Like, try and keep it entertaining and in one conversation. But it is tricky. I definitely do sympathize, but I would just treat it as a skill, like everything else that you've developed as a streamer. You might not think that you've practiced it over hours, but you will have practiced the whole talking to yourself and coming up with your own topics when you had nobody watching you. And this is just another step in that. You have to develop the skill to be able to pick out certain bits of chat that you want to respond to, and probably, unfortunately, have to deal with the negative fallout of a few viewers that supported you from the start not wanting to watch you anymore because you're too big and too mainstream. That's unfortunately just going to be the case. I had the same with my YouTube channel. I used to be able to respond to every comment on the video because, you know, I only had 5 videos and 100 subscribers, whereas now I can't possibly like respond to every single comment. And, you know, at some point, Google actually turns off the emails being sent to your YouTube channel when you get a new comment, because they're like, this is costing us too much as well. So yeah, it's just something you have to deal with. But you've got to spin it and look at the positive. If you're at the point where you can't keep up with chat, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. You've got an interactive community who are writing too many messages for you to keep up with. So congratulations. Hopefully that's something that a lot of listeners can aspire to and will hopefully achieve one day.
Yeah. And just like you said, like you're always going to, you know, rub someone the wrong way in this. Unfortunately, there's no perfect way to do it. There's no rule of thumb, like you respond to every third chat message once you hit 50, like that doesn't exist, right? So you have to find your own pace, and some people are going to be sad if they're used to responding to like every one of their messages, but suddenly you're at your triple viewership or something. It's just not feasible anymore. So I think just bear that in mind and just kind of learn as you go, because you'll get used to it eventually. Like for me, I tend to shorten my responses a lot when I have more people in chat watching, just to get to more people at a time, instead of, if it's, you know, a lower view count, then you can spend more time thinking about your response for each person and read paragraphs and things like that. But if it's hundreds of people in chat talking, then that's not really feasible. So just kind of comes over time. But good question from the community. And if you guys have this struggle, if you're watching or listening, definitely let us know, because I know that it can be tough if you're in that situation and you're not used to it yet.
Right. I think that probably wraps it up, Ben. I am going to go and get my hair cut, which I'm really not doing a good job of selling myself as an interesting person when my last two intros have been about snow in the UK and now a haircut. But it's lockdown. This is as exciting as it gets. But yeah, thanks so much for the questions that we got. As always, do submit them through social media. But other than that, we'll see you next week. Peace.
See you guys.